done in the name of Christ. And this is in an interview with Christianity Today, and he makes this point. He says, so what you're left with is either Christ was who he said he was, the Messiah, or a complete nutcase. I mean, we're taking nutcase on the level of Charles Manson. This man was like some of the people we've been talking about earlier. This man was strapping himself to a bomb and had the King of Jews on his head. And as they were putting him up on the cross, he was going, okay, martyrdom, here we go. Bring on the pain. I can take it. I'm not joking here. The idea that the entire course of civilization for over half of the globe could have its fate changed and turned upside down by a nutcase, for me, that's far-fetched. Yeah, it is far-fetched. And see, Bono is basically making C.S. Lewis's argument in his own way. You need to know about Francis Collins, talking about Lewis saying, you know, people want to go and they want to find the best introductory work on science or something, and imagine if it's by a Christian. Well, the most well-known and considered probably one of the most brilliant scientists alive today is Francis Collins, who was converted from atheism in his 30s by, guess what book? C.S. Lewis's Mere Christianity. Remember I told you, it's a dangerous thing for atheists to read that book. And then he wrote this book, The Language of God, where he presents the evidence, scientific evidence, pointing to the fact that God exists and also the truth of Christianity. I'm going to skip the other two clips because we're running out of time. Let me close with some. I had some other clips. Definitely want to. You need to look up Tim Keller. You need to look up William Lane Craig. I was going to show you some things on that, but I don't want to. I want to give us some time here at the end for Q&A. I'm just going to close with some specific applications for you, students of DCC. How can you work to win this culture for Christ? Let me just say a few fundamentals. First, start with a prayer meeting. Start with a prayer meeting. There has never been a great movement, great revival, that has not started with a few people praying. You need to start with a prayer meeting. You should study this movement that began in the 1700s called the Moravians. This guy named Count Zinzendorf founded this community of young followers of Christ in Herrnhut, Germany. He tried to recreate the early church. And you know what they did with prayer? They had a 24-hour prayer watch where each person took an hour of the day, so like from 3 to 4 in the morning, from 1 to 2 in the afternoon, from 9 to 10 a.m. Everyone had their hour, and that hour was their hour to keep the fire burning. So they would pray, and they did this 24-hour prayer watch for 100 years, a century. And most missiologists, people who study the great missions movement that began in the late 1700s all the way into the early 1900s, it was the catalyst was probably this prayer watch from the Moravians. In fact, they were a big part of the missions movement. They sent missionaries to the ends of the earth. William Carey, Hudson Taylor, John Wesley were all in some way affected by the Moravians. John Wesley, in fact, came to Christ under them, and Charles Wesley. So you can't start a group together and start praying? That's what we need to be doing. What about Zach Sharp's group? I see Zach back there. Anybody part of the Zach Sharp's group? You need to be a part of that. I hear the Holy Spirit setting people on fire in there. You need to be a part of that group. Second, you need to be proclaiming Christ and Him crucified. Every great revival, every great awakening has always proclaimed Christ and Him crucified. Never forget that that's where the real power of the church lies. It's the cross. It's the resurrection of Christ. Let's get the great quote from Paul in Corinthians 1:18. I'm just going to start. He says, since in the wisdom of God in the world through its wisdom did not know him, God was pleased through the foolishness of what was preached to save those who believe. Jews demand miraculous signs and Greeks look for wisdom, but we preach Christ crucified, a stumbling block to Jews and a foolishness to Gentiles, but to those whom God has called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ the power of God and the wisdom of God. This is where the power of God, that power that created the universe, where do we find that power? It's in the cross. So how can you unleash this power of God, Christ and His Word, into our culture? How can you flood our culture with that? Each of you should come up with your own ideas. Pray for God to give you ideas. Social media, obviously, is a great one. Flood the social media that you're a part of with God's truth. But do it creatively, right? Do it creatively. Don't just put Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Do it creatively. Do it in a creative way. And like I said, promote these good examples, you know. Tell everyone about Lecrae. Tell everyone about Francis Collins. Look up Tim Keller, William Lane Craig, Ravi Zacharias, N.T. Wright, John Lennox. There's a ton of great examples to put out there and to get and let people know that some of the top, musicians, scientists, everything, are bowing their knee to Christ. And here's another one I'll challenge you with. You need a sense of humor, right? You need to be kind of funny. You need to lighten up a little bit. You need to be a little humble. You know, if you know Stephen Colbert and Jon Stewart, they win every feud they ever have with anyone in this culture. And you know why? Because they're funny. Their wit wins. And so you need to pray and ask God for wit, because ultimately humor comes, pure humor comes from God. And I'll give you one of the great, my favorite examples, who I've learned from, is G.K. Chesterton. He was funnier than all his contemporaries. In fact, G.K. Chesterton came to Christ not because he read Christian theology and apologetics. You know how he came to Christ? From reading The Atheists. He read the best atheist books, and that is what converted him. In fact, he says this in his book Orthodoxy, telling his story. He says, "As I laid down the last of Colonel Ingersoll's atheistic lectures, the dreadful thought broke across my mind. Almost thou persuadest me to be a Christian." And you know, he picked on the atheists. He was friends with all the atheists, but he picked on them. You know, you can pick on them. You know, pick on their ideas. Not them particularly, but their ideas. The worst moment for the atheist is when he is really thankful and he has nobody to thank. That's a sad moment. Atheists will take that because it's witty, it's funny, and it's true. And he says, "It's absurd for the evolutionist to complain that it is unthinkable for an admittedly unthinkable God to make everything out of nothing, and then pretend that it is more thinkable that nothing should turn itself into everything." Read G.K. Chesterton and Spurgeon, too. Another great one to learn the wit. So lastly, being a creative extremist, smuggling Christianity undercover into your culture. I was going to give examples from my own life, because I say, you know, I'm a hypocrite up here if I'm sitting on the sidelines and not trying to do this. So I am trying to do this. I am looking for lecture hall of tyrannuses. Starbucks is one of my lecture hall of tyrannuses. I'm able to share Christ with all kinds of different walks of life every day. I always got four people sitting at a table that I'm studying at, businessmen, different people, and suddenly I have a small group because I have my Bible out. I got my bait. I got something that says Common Sense 101 or something about Jesus or something about the Bible, and I'm able to talk. I go to bars and speak at the Ginger Man college campuses. I'm always looking for lecture hall of tyrannuses, and I'm also looking for creative ways to get Christ in our culture. And one of my best examples that God has given me was, we're not going to show it, but it even made the news. We had 30 people, really 100 people were involved, but we had 30 people carry crosses, big crosses, from a strip club in Harry Hines all the way to West Plano, and that was on Good Friday this Easter, earlier this year, and it made the news and different things. And so it just got people thinking. It got people focusing on the cross that otherwise would not. My latest radical idea, not as good as that one, but I'm going to go to a public spot in West Plano, this real popular area, tons of people out, bars, restaurants, everything, and I'm going to go to this public square, and I'm going to just read the New Testament out loud from Matthew to Revelation, just see how long it takes to read the New Testament. So it's a fun little experiment, but it's also going to, you know, get people excited. So all y'all are, of course, welcome to come to that. So you could be a creative extremist by just joining our church, but I understand all y'all can't do that. So what's your lecture hall of Tyrannus? What are the gifts and talents that you can use to influence this culture for Christ? I hope I've given you some ideas. Hope the Holy Spirit has given you ideas of injustices to fight against, ways to get the truth out, ways to proclaim Christ and Him crucified. Just remember, the church is lying in Delilah's lap, and it needs to hear, "Wake up, Samson! The Philistines are upon you! Wake up, Samson!" Because either we're going to get up and fight, or we're going to lay there and have our eyes gouged out. Maybe our heads cut off too. You never know. As Jesus said, you are either with me or against me. So I pray you and I would be with him. Thanks. Well, we have at least 10 minutes, right? Do we have till 12? So we have at least 10 minutes. We wanted to give a little bit of time. I was hoping to give you a little bit longer, but just kind of a little quick Q&A. Of course, I'm available, and you ever want to email me and talk afterwards, definitely, but just wanted to give an opportunity, and we weren't going to do it the text way, so that way I could follow up real quickly if you didn't think I was answering your question. So wanted to give opportunities just right now, and Eric's got a microphone, so raise your hand if you had just questions like on the top. You know, of course, we can talk about anything, but, you know, ideally things about what we're talking about. So we got a question over there. Yeah, he talks pretty loud.
Cool. Do you know, can you define where the dividing line is between bringing culture, being implicit, as opposed to watering down Christianity so that people will listen. And so can you more further explain how that would work in the church? Because, I mean, you don't want to water church down to the point where people aren't getting full theology that they need.
Yeah, I'm kind of extreme on both ends. So it's like, you know, giving them hardcore truth, not putting the cookies on the lower shelf. I think, you know, we have to change the language, obviously, so we don't run around and just say propitiation to, you know, I use the word propitiation when I speak at the Ginger Man or something like that. So I'm going to change the language and speak the language of the culture, but I'm going to give them the best of the best that I got, the best that the truth that I have. So, I mean, I think we have to just do both. We have to do our best to get in the culture and get among unbelievers, learn their language like Daniel and Moses and even C.S. Lewis said, you know, we have to talk like them. We got to learn how they speak and then preach the gospel through that vehicle, but don't water it down. I'm not for watering down, putting the cookies on the lower shelf at all. And I do see that. That's what a large portion of, that's another movement going on in the church where they're watering down the truth of the gospel in order to bring more people in, and that's definitely not the way either. And the opposite is to speak in a language that no one understands, and then you just ostracize everyone except that thinks just like you. I even saw one time there was a church, I think it was called Premillennial Dispensationalist Baptist Church or something like that. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. I mean, even if that's true, I mean, to put that as your title of your church, I mean, only this narrow group are going to be going to your church. I mean, that kind of ostracism is ridiculous. Let's stick with the essentials. So, hope that helped. Any other? And Dr. Allen had a great example of someone who's doing this, too, so share that for sure.
Yeah, this was a little prefab here before chapel. I think it's important to realize that when we talk about the church impacting culture, that it's not just in terms of getting people to accept Jesus, but also to, part of redeeming the culture is simply turning the culture toward the list that Paul gives in Philippians 4:8, whatever's noble, what is true, whatever's lovely. And I think one of the greatest examples of this is somebody most of you know, but you may not realize what he's doing. John Lasseter, who's the chief dude at Pixar, is a Church of Christ guy who got his start as a young person drawing cartoons during church. And his dad got a little frustrated that he was drawing cartoons during church. But instead of saying, stop that, he showed the preacher the cartoons. And then the preacher had him start drawing cartoons during church services, drawing cartoons for the children's, you know, teachers and all that. And then he goes off to Pepperdine University and gets a degree in animation in California. And so now he's doing, you know, Bugs Life. You know, you think about Toy Story, all the messages that are implicit in there are about that which is good, that which is noble, that which is admirable.
That's right.
So I think that's part of redeeming culture. It's not just getting people down the aisle, but saying we're in the image of God. We need to express beautiful things.
Exactly.
That God gave us.
I completely agree. And I think that's where Lord of the Rings is a great example of that, where they it's showing those Christian virtues and people are respond to them, they realize they want that, and then you explain to them that only works in a Christian worldview. Only under Christianity is there real beauty, right? If not, what we're looking at, I mean, if atheism is true, what we're looking at is just, you know, something we adapted to in our under the evolutionary stage. There's real and high beauty.
I wanted to get your thoughts on, because I agree with everything you're saying with C.S. Lewis, but get your thoughts on someone like Tim Tebow, who is very explicit about his faith. But yeah, when he wears like John 3:16 on his eyeliner,
yeah,
Google is overrun with people searching that. So someone like him is kind of the opposite of what C.S. Lewis talked about, but still a very big lightning rod for our culture.
I agree. I think Tim Tebow I think we need that too. We need the explicit, and especially in a context like that, you could put your, you know, you put the scripture under your eye. Other people do similar things, so why can't you do scripture? I think Tim Tebow did a great job. I think the problem with Tebow is the culture just kind of turned against him, and so because of that, you can't, I mean, we should defend him, we should do, you know, all that, but we can't use him as the best example. So I think we should use another sports figure that's passionate about Christ, that's, you know, that people aren't thinking about. It's the same thing with William Lane Craig. See, William Lane Craig, I'll give you an example. He's like the greatest debater. He mops the floor with atheists and unbelievers all over the place. You can watch his debates on YouTube. But atheists have like grown annoyed with him. And most of this rising atheist community, the nuns in our country, just are annoyed with him because he uses the same arguments every time. And even though the arguments have never been answered, they just get sick of him. And so when they hear his name, they immediately like just get annoyed and you can't talk about it. So I bring in other people. I don't use William Lane Craig, not because I don't value him, and I don't think he's, you know, the one of the best of the best, but I want to use someone that's going to kind of catch him off guard. So it's kind of that undercover thing. So Tebow's great, but because he's become, you know, the way our culture's done it, which is part of the evil, it's that enemy's line of communication. He wants to completely downplay anything that's promoting Christ in the culture. But I think he's excellent. In fact, I'm friends with his brother-in-law. We went to seminary together.
I had a question about, so are you saying that we are not supposed to be like roaring lions, basically crying loud and spare not, telling people the word?
That's no, we should. We should be. We should be.
I'm trying to get an understanding of what you're saying, because it seems like you want us to, I don't know, kind of be quiet about it, don't hurt anybody. But I feel like, you know, we're not supposed to offend, but, I mean, the way, whatever Jesus says, is just what it is, you know?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Let me give you, you know, an illustration. Like, you know, some atheist meeting, you could either give them you could go and stand at the corner and you could just preach and you could scream and you could say the gospel, which would be true, or you could go and get to know them and befriend them and eventually give them a book like by Francis Collins, and you can give them a book by C.S. Lewis, and while you're talking to them, you're talking about Jesus. You're not quieting down anything. Remember I said you're not watering down anything, but you're doing it in a different way. You're not just standing at the corner ostracized. You see, you're trying to go in undercover in a way, but befriend them, and you're trying to get into relationships with people. So it's just a different way of doing it than kind of the we're Christians over here and we're trying to tell you the truth and that's it. You know, we're trying to get that connection going and that relationship, because that's the only way we're really, I think, going to see people be transformed. Oh, we have somebody over here. And I stand up and do open-air preaching, too, still, by the way. I do that, too, but I'm not against that.
I guess I just want to make sure that I understand as well, sort of going with what she said. Because I know sometimes people see Christians that are super outspoken and they're just very argumentative, that they are harmful towards Christianity. So is that sort of what you're talking about, is that can be what the issue is, because it can be harmful whenever you're just arguing your point, but you're not really...
Exactly.
Making a point, you're not making lasting relationships.
Exactly. It's the tone, and that's what I was going to show with the Tim Keller. See, Tim Keller, in a clip, answers this question about homosexuality, and it's the tone that I wanted to show you, because a lot of people get defensive, and they take the strong stand, and they're just kind of condemning. Tim Keller says it's the truth. He says exactly what the scriptures say, but he also says it in a very gentle, true, loving way, and he admits where the church has failed on this area. And so it's the tone is what we need to change, and we need to look to those who are doing this well with the tone, I think, because the argumentative side just shuts people down. It just, you know, people aren't listening. You know, I always say I even know many Christians like this, that, you know, they'll go out and they'll just be jerks to people, and then they're like, oh, I was persecuted for Christ today. I'm like, no, you were just a jerk. You know, that's what it was. There's a fine line between being persecuted for the gospel and just being persecuted for being a jerk. And so, you know, that's what we have to balance.
I think, honestly, if we think about Jesus and we think about, because that's our greatest example, is Jesus. That's who we fashion ourselves after. That's who That's the reason why we do what we do.
Everybody wanted to
do it. For 30 years, he was in the culture. I mean, he was learning. He was building those relationships. And a lot of times we forget that when we think of his ministry. But that's what he was up until he was, you know, I mean.
Exactly.
And the way that he did it, he was the same thing. He wasn't that explicit. He didn't come out and say, "Hey, I'm king. Hey, you guys, I'm," you know, he didn't do that.
And everybody wanted to be around him. The culture, people wanted to be around him. The people that didn't want to be around Jesus were the religious people. They were the self-righteous people.
We have one more. All right, guys, would you guys show your appreciation to Dr. Justin Bass? If you guys would, make your way on back to your seat here real quick. We'll wait. Next time I see you guys like this, it's going to be on the baseball field on Tuesday. Be sure you guys...